Job chapter 38. Now finally the friends have stopped speaking, Elihu's stopped speaking, and we're all a bit fed up with these guys just going on and on, round in circles, saying the same thing, and not really answering the problem that Job was a righteous man who's suffered. And what was going to happen? Of course, Job has complained about all that, and that's understandable. And finally, God speaks, and we're so relieved. And this is how it is with us in our sufferings. When people don't really help us and we're disappointed in people, we think, oh, I so want that connection with God. And Job thought he had to wait until the last day, till he was dead and resurrected, before he could actually hear God's voice. And now Yahweh answered Job out of the whirlwind. That is, the storm has been blowing up and it's now a whirlwind, and God speaks out of it. So he does actually get an answer in this life, which not everybody gets, but he did. He said, "Who is this who makes counsel dark by words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man, for I will question you, then you answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if you have understanding. Who determined its measures, if you know, or who stretched the line on it? Whereupon were its foundations fastened, or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." So God is saying, all that I've done in creation, in absolutely everything I've made, including in your life, I absolutely planned it out. But do you think you can understand how I've made things? No, you can't. You can simply see what I've done, and you can say, wow, that is the hand of God, but you can't ultimately understand how it's all been designed. It's too complex. And so it is in our lives that you can say, this is the hand of God. But that doesn't mean that you totally understand, and a lot of our suffering and pain is because we assume that I should understand, I ought to understand. Why can't I understand? And that's all a test of our humility. Who shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness, marked out for it my bound, set bars and doors, and said, here you may come, but no further. Here your proud waves shall be stopped. Well, at that time, they thought that the sea was really somehow evil and mysterious. And they believed in a big monster of evil that lived in the sea. And God's saying, well, whatever, but I created the sea, and I have set bounds. I set bounds for darkness, and I've set bounds for the sea. So God will not test us, as Paul says, beyond what we can bear, but will, with the test, make a way to escape. And as David says in the Psalms, the rod of the wicked will not so lay upon the righteous that they have to put forth their hand unto evil. So in other words, yes, there are limits of suffering, and God knows them. And he won't test anybody beyond what they can bear. Now, of course, we all think, oh no, I was provoked so much. I was tested more than I could bear. So that's why I had a tantrum. That's why I shouted. That's why I did this or that. But no, that's sin, because God will not test us beyond what we can bear. In the same way as he set a limit to the sea and to the waves, he has set an end, a limit to darkness. Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the earth in its breadth? Declare if you know it all. What is the way to the dwelling of light? As for darkness, where is its place? That you should take it to its bound, that you should discern the paths to its house. So he's saying you can't lay those boundaries for the light and for the darkness, for the evil that happens in our lives, but I can. So just trust me. Surely you know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Have you entered the treasures of the snow, or have you seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? By what way is the lightning distributed, or the east wind scattered on the earth? Who has cut a channel for the flood water, or the path for the thunderstorm, to cause it to rain on a land where no man is, on the wilderness in which there is no man? to satisfy the waste and desolate ground, to cause the tender grass to spring forth. Well, that rather confirms to me that there was a thunderstorm going on at this time. And so God is talking as the flood water is crashing around. He says, does the rain have a father, or who fathers the drops of dew? Out of whose womb came the ice, the grey frost of the sky? Who has given birth to it? The waters become hard like stone when the surface of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades, or loosen the cords of Orion, that is, the constellations of the stars in the sky? Can you lead forth the constellations in their season? Do you know the laws of the heavens? Can you establish its dominion over the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds, that abundance of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings, that they may go? Do they report to you, saying, here we are? So then, God is in complete control of those things which human beings might consider disaster, like lightnings, darkness, thunders. Especially in the ancient world, people thought that any kind of lightning or anything to do with the water, this was the gods getting angry or whatever. They were very frightened of things like thunderstorms. And that's why there was a thunderstorm going on. And God is saying, what you think is evil, what you think is maybe coming from someone like some sort of Satan, like people believe in today, some sort of big evil monster, I'm telling you that no, I'm in control. This is the simple lesson. Can you hunt the prey for the lioness, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens and lie in wait in the thicket? Who provides for the raven, his prey, when his young ones cry to God and wander for lack of food? So then God is saying that I provide for the animals. I provide for absolutely everybody. So don't think that I don't care about you. So the friends and Elihu tend to come out with a story that God's so great and powerful, a man is so rotten and unclean and tiny, that, you know, who are you to get so worked up about this? And Job has been disagreeing with that. He said, no, God tests me every moment. God's deeply involved in my life. And that's true. And now God, I think, is supporting Job, and he says, look at creation. Do you not see that I actually am consciously involved, and I give food to the lioness? I satisfy the appetite of the young lions. Although it might appear to all be going on in clockwork, as it were, tick-tock sort of clockwork, I'm actually involved. And this is the wonderful comfort, that God is involved, that man is not alone, that God is not distant, that God has not left the world going on clockwork. He is actively involved every moment. And Job came to understand that through his sufferings, whereas the friends in Elihu didn't.